Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater, program number 247 in the series. This is January 7, 2018. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
Hey, we're going to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. And we have the CEO in, Dan Jaffe of Cat's Pride and Oil Dry. Also, Dave Weiske, Vice President of Customer Success, are going to be here in just a moment. We're going to talk about Cat's Pride and then give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one of our lucky winners. And we're also going to play some great classic radio shows for you. Gunsmoke, My Friend Irma, and The New Adventures of Nero Wolf. We also have Mike Estella here. We have our producer, Shantae Garth. It's just a full house here.
We like it like that.
Yes, we do. All
We're
right.
A big family.
And it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming film The Aftermath, about a British colonel and his wife whose tensions rise with the German widower who lives with them.
What do they win?
They are going to win a MyPillow, guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you will ever own.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of 2016's The Legend of Tarzan.
I grew up running on all fours. It changed the bone structure.
Yeah, changed the bone structure.
Okay, we'll do that.
Who is that actor? 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that clip one more time.
I grew up running on all fours. It changed the bone structure.
And we have Sue on the phone. Hey, Sue.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
Great. Do you know this actor?
Yes, I believe it's Alexander Skarsgård.
Alexander Skarsgård. I mean, I didn't
she
mean...
She said her, his what? Name right.
I know. And God. It sounded like you actually like knew him, like he was a good friend of
you
yours.
You know, Alexander, he comes over every once in a
I
while.
I call him Al, but yeah, you know. Sue, so we are so happy to give you a MyPillow. I'm guessing you could use a new pillow. Like, who couldn't?
Oh, my neck's going to like that, that's for sure.
Absolutely. It's guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you will ever own. You can check it out at MyPillow.com. Congratulations on the MyPillow, and thank you so much for calling in and starting our show off tonight.
Thank you. Happy
Take
New
care.
Year.
You too,
Thanks,
Sue.
Happy New Year. All right. It is time now to bring in our guests, Dan Jaffe, CEO of Oil Dry, which is the parent company to Cat's Pride, and also Dave Weiske. He's the Vice President of Customer Success. What's up, guys?
Hi, Carl. Hi, Lisa.
We're so happy to have you in. It's
Hi,
our
Dave.
once a month day today.
Yeah.
Carl, Lisa, Mike, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Did you get your MyPillow for Christmas?
You know, I have a MyPillow. Lisa bought me two MyPillows.
Mike and I did that.
I think we all... Dan, do you have a MyPillow?
I do, because Dave got me one.
And I also have Cat's Pride Ultimate Care next to my pillow.
Well, you should. Well, let's talk about Cat's Pride and why our listeners need to be switching over to Cat's Pride, and also a new promotion called Litter for Good. Let's talk about that, Dan.
Yeah, that's we're very excited about it. This is not a one-time thing. This is something we're embarking on. We've been donating litter to shelters for years. We know it's a big expense of shelters, and we've always wanted to help do our part to help save cats. And Now we actually are organizing this program where our loyal customers can get involved and they can help direct those donations to shelters that are interesting to them. So all they have to do is for free join the Cats Pride Club. They go to catspride.com. It's very clear how to, you can watch a video with me and Catherine Heigl, which kind of explains the program. And then you can join our club and then you can actually nominate your shelter. If they're not already in the drop down box, you can physically then write them in. Sort of a write-in ballot, and then we'll list them. And the more nominations a shelter gets, the more litter they're going to receive. And then what we're going to do is every time we sell a green jug of Cat's Pride Fresh and Light, we're going to donate a pound to one of those shelters. So, you know, last year we sold over 4 million units.
It's not more like 5.5 million.
More like 5.5 million yeah. units. And
sorry to correct you.
I'm happy to be correct. Anytime it's higher, you can correct me.
Dan, how is this litter apps actually dispersed to the shelters?
So we airlift it and just drop it on the shelter from about 20,000.
Right via a drone.
Yeah.
On the roof and just it explodes.
We've actually hit some of it. No. No. What happens is we have a full-time shelter manager now who's managing this whole program. And, in fact, we're going to have her come on the show. Leah is in one of the newest Cat's Pride teammates, and she'll come on the show one of these Sunday nights and help explain all this. But she's managing it, and she is going to coordinate, reach out to the shelters, and then as they accumulate nominations, get them whatever they want. If it's pallets, if it's half truckloads, if it's one or two. If someone in Wyoming gets nominated and they win 10 pounds, we'll just send them a couple of free coupons so they can go to their local store and get it for free. So that's the program, and we really believe this can make a difference because the numbers are staggering and they're pretty negative. 3 million cats enter shelters in the U.S. every year, and only 1.5 million get adopted.
Yeah.
So you know you can do the math.
Well, you know, here's the great thing. There's two ways, really, for all of our listeners all across the country that are listening to this broadcast right now. There's really two ways you can help save cats and dogs' lives. And the two ways are you buy Cat's Pride kitty litter. That'll be one of the ways because now they're going to donate kitty litter, which helps those shelters save money. They don't have to buy kitty litter anymore. They can use that money to help that cat get better, you know, help it to feel better and do all kinds of things for it, plus help it get adopted. Now, the other way is by you joining the Cat's Pride Club and nominating a shelter. So there's two ways. We really want you to get involved, folks.
So our new website is up and running. I will tell you, I tested it. Not everything is working perfectly. For instance, I put in my zip code where I live to find my local shelter, and it didn't come up. So we'll be working on that. But certainly you can write in. If you know the name of your shelter, you can put it in. And shelters like the Anti-Cruelty Society and all around the U.S., we've populated it with about, I want to say, 300 or 400 of the largest shelters we could find. But we're expecting a lot of write-in ballots.
Now, the video of you and Catherine Heigl kind of traveling to shelter in a really cool VW bug that you had restored. It's a VW bug wagon, right? Something like that?
Yeah, it's an old minibus. Yeah.
Wow, that was really cool. So now, is that video up yet? Or
yes.
Will it be? Okay, it's up. So definitely go to catspride.com. Go to catspride.com, and you'll see this whole program. It's really neat. Dan and Catherine Heigl in the van going to shelter to learn all about it. And you can always buy Cat's Pride. It's in the green jug. Definitely go to your favorite grocer. And, Dave, where are the places people can get Cat's Pride?
Well, first and foremost, with regard to the ease of just ordering online, you can go to Walmart.com, you can go to Amazon.com, Chewy.com. But as far as brick and mortar and the locations that are, you know, basically out there in your super grocery stores, we have Walmart, Mariano's, Meijer, Jewel, Albertsons, H.E. Butt, if you're in the Texas area, and I know we reach out that far, Woodman's, you can go just about anywhere. We want to get into more distribution, but again, most of the grocery stores carry us. Look for the green jug.
Yeah, not only is it the best cat Pride, Cat's Pride kitty litter in the marketplace. Best kitty litter there is, but it's also a way to help save cats and dogs all across the country.
Absolutely.
I would like to mention we got a great one, many texts, but one of the great texts that we just recently received is one of our loyal listeners. We have a group of ladies that always listen to our show, and she said that she bought her daughter an entire case of Cat's Pride for a Christmas gift, and her daughter absolutely loves the product.
Awesome.
What a great gift. What a useful gift, and how we appreciate that if you're going to buy kitty litter that you choose Cat's Pride. We really,
really
do.
There's really no reason to not switch over. If you're not using Cat's Pride in the green jug, you really need to do it, because not only is it just great for the cats and it's the best product, but they're also our sponsor here on the WGN Radio
And more
Theater.
Importantly, getting involved in this effort, you know, again, Litter for Good is huge. And again, the heart of cat owners, I mean, they're huge. And again, this is about helping your local shelters. And please go on out to catspride.com and look into the program. I think you'll be very impressed that every time you're ordering or you're going ahead and purchasing, 1 pound per jug goes towards that shelter.
Well, somebody out there is going to get a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter right now. So let's have a drum roll, please.
Who's picking?
I am. Okay, here's our new 2018 winner. It is Janice Slasku. Her cat Stinky. And oh my God, she's from Pottsville, Pennsylvania. Now, Pottsville is the really where Yuengling Brewery got started, and also the birthplace of my mother. So,
wow.
Isn't that cool? What
nice.
A small world.
And her cat Stinky. Her cat
Stinky
will have the best kitty litter on the planet.
Maybe he won't be Stinky anymore.
And she had Mr. Bill right next to Stinky, which is kind of funny. Congrats.
Well, awesome. She's a big winner. And thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dan. We really appreciate you coming in here and giving away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. And if you want to enter, folks out there, if you want to have a chance to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, just send a photo of you and your cat and send it to us here. Email it to us at catspridephoto@gmail.com. Make sure you have your cat's name, your name, your city and state. Very important. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Sure appreciate it.
Thank
good
you both
to see you.
For being generous, not only for the year supply, but obviously for all the shelters.
And we're really excited about this campaign.
Can't
and Dan
wait
is,
to
Dan
see
is awesome on the TV. You'll
and
love
the TV
it.
Spots start this month, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, let's take a quick break, and then it's Gunsmoke. Stick around. All right, it is time for Gunsmoke. Let's go back to October 10th, 1952. This is called Hinkadoo. Here's William Conrad, part one of Gunsmoke.
Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Dillon.
Morning, Miss Ida May.
Hiya, Marshal.
Good morning, John.
Hey, Matt. Wait a second.
Huh? Oh, hiya, Doc.
Oh, on my way over to jail. After you.
Oh?
You heard about the Longhorn?
No, what about it?
You haven't heard or you wouldn't ask.
Well, heard what, Doc?
Well, I'll walk along with you if you're heading that way.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was heading that way. Hey, what's all that crowd out in front there for?
In due time, Matt. In due time.
You know, Doc, there's only one thing that makes you happier than having a secret, and that's to collect your coroner's fee.
Yeah, might get a fee out of this, too, for it, Silver.
Yeah, no wonder you're all worked up.
Hey, have you heard about the longhorn? It's the doggone
what?
Thing. Your longhorn's the doggonest thing I ever come across.
Morning, Mr. Dillon.
Hiya, Chester.
Say, you heard about the longhorn?
No, Chester, I have not heard about the longhorn.
What? He's upset, Chester. He's the only man in Dodge who hasn't heard.
Look, so help me, Doc, if this is one of your practical jokes.
No. I had nothing to do with it. You'll see.
Will you pardon me, ma'am?
Let him through.
Pardon me, please.
Let me through.
Excuse me.
Well, Mr. Dillon?
What do you think of it, Matt? Aside from the misspelled words.
The longhorn been closed all morning?
Yep, locked tight. That sign was on the door daylight.
The Longhorn Saloon will open at 8 o'clock tonight with new management and a new policy. Everybody welcome, signed the new manager, Mamie.
Mamie? That's a woman, Matt.
Lately of Kansas City, St. Louis, and points east.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Dillon. We never had a woman running a saloon in Dodge City before.
And we won't now, Chester. The boys won't let her last an hour, I'm afraid.
They're kind of fun for that hour, though.
Yeah, and another thing, if this Mamie is the new manager, what's happened to Herman Bleeker?
Well, I don't know. He must have sold it to her.
He didn't say anything about it yesterday morning.
That's right. I saw him over at the livery stable in the afternoon, showing off one of them fancy vests he's always ordering. And he never said one word about it.
Well, you know that little Popinjay. He's flighty. Probably happened sudden.
Yeah, too sudden, Doc. Even for Herman.
Say, come think of it, I haven't seen him all morning. And he's usually strutting up and down Front Street, preening himself like a powder pigeon.
Yeah, he's probably upstairs there, sleeping in, getting ready for the opening tonight.
We gonna be here, Mr. Dillon?
Mamie, huh?
Mr. Dillon?
Huh? Oh, yeah, Chester. We're gonna be here.
I'm sorry, Bard, but she's upstairs. Said she'd be down about 8 o'clock, and that's all I know about it. Now, if you want to order anything, let's hear it. And if you don't, just shut up.
Say, the boys are acting kind of rambunctious, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, she'll wish she stayed in St. Louis on the points east.
Say, Matt, I was talking to the bartender. I asked him what she looks like, and he said if he told me, I wouldn't believe it.
Now, the fellow I'd like to talk to is Herman Bleeker.
Yeah, well, nobody seen hiding hair of him. You know, Matt, I'm beginning to wonder, too.
Howdy, strangers!
What?
Welcome to the Longhorn! I'm Mamie, the new owner.
Mamie? She's my
girlfriend. My gracious sakes alive.
190 pounds if she weighs an ounce.
Yeah, the bartender was right. I wouldn't have believed it.
Boys, looks like we're going to be doing business together, so let's get things straight right in the beginning. Now, in the first place, the minute you stick your foot inside that door, you're on my stomping ground. I'm the boss of the shebang, and don't you ever forget it. When I tell anybody to hop, he hops. Is that clear? Now, tell you what, I aim to give the squarest deal in town. All the liquor here's gonna be aged over 30 days. And the dancing girls aged under 30 years. The liquor's straight, and the girls are graceful. There's only four aces in every deck, and the cards only read from the front side. You'll get a fair shake for your money, but there ain't gonna be no fandangling. And another thing, mister! I'm talking.
Well, so I, old battle axe.
Excuse me, boys.
Looks like it started, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, wait a second.
He paid for his drink?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, you wall-eyed little maverick, come on! Throw his head out after him! Now, as I was saying, boys, I just won't stand for no fandangling. Now, maybe some of you
figured I was wearing this six-shooter for a decoration. When I just cast your eyes on that ace of spades I got tacked up on the back wall. Now!
What did you see?
For the land's sakes, did you see that draw, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, and she got the card, too.
Oh, the boys won't give her no trouble, ma'am.
All right, boys, the first one's on the house. And it's the last three one you'll get. And the only credit I give is for funeral expenses. Belly up, boys!
Well, sir, Mr. Dillon? Chester, I want to talk to Herman Bleeker more than ever now.
Hey, you know, she's big enough to... Well, I'll bet she forced Herman to sell.
Yeah, maybe. Doc, I'll be right back. I want to talk to her.
Oh, that you was nothing, boys! Oh, you're the marshal, huh?
Yeah, that's right, ma'am. My name's Dillon.
Proud to shake your hand, Mr. Dillon.
Well, thank you, Miss Mamie. Welcome to Dodge City.
Mighty decent of you to express the sentiment, Marshal. I reckon you won't get much business around the Longhorn. I'll take care of any trouble that's around here.
It'd be quite a change. The boys used to push Bleeker around every now and then.
Oh, that runty little prairie dog.
I didn't know he was planning to sell, Miss Mamie. He must have made up his mind in a hurry.
Yeah? I made him an offer, and he took it. Just like that.
He found himself some new living quarters, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. He moved right out last night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder where he's holed up.
Huh?
There are a couple of things I'd like to see him about.
Well, now, I tell you, I'm afraid he left town, Mr. Dillon. I think he said something about taking the Santa Fe to St. Louis, now that I remember.
Oh, I see. Well, that's too bad. I'd sure like to have seen him. Well, I'll probably drop in now and then, Miss Mamie.
Sure! Anytime, Marshal. For you, it's on the house!
Thank you.
Yeah. What'd you find out, Mr. Dillon?
Let's get out of here, Chester. Come on, Doc.
Sure. Oh, yes, with both ears a-flapping.
Well, boys, what do you think of her?
Oh, my gracious, Mr. Dillon, I sure would hate to meet her in the dark.
Oh, why, she's got a voice like a buffalo.
Ain't it awful?
It just itches your ears, don't it?
Why, the woman's a human monstrosity.
I still haven't seen Herman.
Huh. What'd she say, man?
She says she thinks he left town.
Oh,
Chester, I want you to check all the rooming houses and hotels along Front Street. I'm going to go to the railroad station and the stage lines. I'll meet you over at the jail, huh?
Yes, Mr. Dillon.
Say, Matt, I think Herman keeps a horse over at the livery stable.
Yeah, I thought of that, Doc. I wonder, would you be good enough to look into that for me?
Why, sure, be happy to.
You know, Mr. Dillon, she is an awful straight shot.
Yeah, Chester, I know.
Hey, Lisa, do you think back in the Western days in the 1800s they had steroids? Because those crickets were on steroids. Did you hear those things?
Yeah, they were loud.
they were like super...
You know, they're setting the mood.
They
know?
Were super, super crickets.
Super dramatic, but they were setting a mood.
Yeah, I guess so. That's the first portion of Gunsmoke with Hinkadoo from 1952. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, we're back. This is program 247 in the series. And don't forget, we have a podcast of this show. And every show, somehow you can get it, right?
Yes, go to WGNradio.com. I have the app on my phone, of course.
Of course you do.
Go to podcasts and then hit WGN Radio Theater. You can start at 1 and go through all the way through 246 at the moment.
Oh, right, because 247 isn't up yet. But it will be just a few minutes after our broadcast.
That's true. We have the best of the best over here.
She's the best. All right, let's get back now to Gunsmoke.
You here, Matt?
Oh, yeah, come on in, Doc.
Well, his horse is still over at the stable. He didn't tell them anything about leaving.
He didn't leave, Doc. Mimi came in on the 9 o'clock train last night. Only one train out after that around midnight. He wasn't on it. And he didn't buy a ticket on the stage either.
Yes, see, now what did I tell you? Matt, that settles it.
Yeah, of course he may have moved into one of the hotels.
Oh, sir, Mr. Dillon, I'm afraid he didn't.
What'd you find out, Chester?
That nobody in this town has seen Herman Bleeker since around 9 o'clock last night.
Matt, I knew I'd get me a fee out of this, one way or the other.
Well, don't spend it yet, Doc. What?
Buenas noches, señores.
Oh, Manuel, come on in.
Gracias, señor Dillon.
Well, what's on your mind?
Pues, señor, I was at the railroad depot when I hear you ask about the little one, el señor Bleeker.
No.
And the other, the señora. Oh, there is much woman on that one.
Well, there's no argument there, Manuel.
Señor, last night I have seen something which is strange.
No?
I am come home very late, 1 hour, 2 hours before dawn. I was visit a friend, you understand?
Yeah, I understand.
You see, I am walk home in much hurry, and it is very dark, señor, when at once I see this lantern in the arroyo behind the Longhorn Cantina.
Oh, a lantern, you say?
I am think, what is this? So I wait, and this lantern is come toward me. And when it is close, oh, this woman who I have no see one like her. Oh, what a scare.
Well, what was she doing in the arroyo?
I do not know, but it's one thing I forget. She has carried something in her hand.
Well, what was it, Manuel?
A shovel, señor.
Find anything, Matt?
Well, there's something here, Doc. But I can't quite... Hold the lantern over here, will you, Chester?
Yes, sir, Mr. Dillon.
I found something here, if I can just get it loose.
Lantern all right, Mr. Dillon? Can you see what it is?
Yeah, it's fine, Chester. Yeah, I got it.
Oh.
It's a boot. Yeah, here... Here's the other one.
Yeah. For all that fancy stitching. Matt, those are his. I've seen them on him.
Yeah, so have I, Doc. Yesterday, in fact. Here, take them, Chester.
Yes, sir.
There's a bundle of some kind here.
Ooh, you found the body, huh?
No, it's clothes, I think, Doc. Let's have a look. Yeah. That's all there is, too. The hole doesn't go any deeper. That's hard pan on the bottom there. Hold the lantern down, Chester, and let me get this unwrapped.
I'm not so sure about that coat, Mr. Dillon. A lot of them like that around town.
Yeah, I know, but take a look at this fancy vest.
Oh, that's Herman's. Nobody else in Dodge City would ever wear a thing like that.
Well, from the looks of it, he won't be wearing it again. You coming, Doc?
You know, don't rush me, Matt. Don't rush me. I haven't made one of these blood tests in years. If you ask me, I don't see any use in making one now. Well, let me see. Pour the precipitant into here. What other kind of blood could it be except human?
Doc, I only want to be sure, that's all.
All right. Now, let me see. 5 drops of the sulfate. Yeah. Oh, you sure look uncomfortable, Matt.
Well, how'd you like to try arresting that lady, Doc?
Not my job to arrest her. All I'm doing is stopping up these loopholes Matt's trying to wiggle out of.
Well, that's real decent of you, Doc. Real decent.
No, sir, Matt, I don't recall you ever being in such a predicament. Oh, of course, I remember the night you shot it out with the Barkley boys over in the Alafraganza. There were 3 of them. And you did not turn a hair. And then that other time when you got dry gulched by the Platte River Gang.
All right, Doc, all right, all right. But this is different. If I go to arrest that woman, she's just crazy enough to start a gunfight.
Oh, it's a problem. It's a problem, all right. Now, let's see. We'll just shake this up and warm it a bit. Yeah.
You know, there is one thing, though, Mr. Dillon. Shooting at a mark's not the same as a gunfight. Maybe she wouldn't even resist.
You really believe that, Chester?
No, sir. No. She ain't a woman. She's a human catastrophe.
She sure is from that.
Well, there's still a chance we may be going off half-cocked here. That blood could have got on Herman's vest a dozen different ways.
We'll soon see. Let's see. A couple of drops of reagent. One, two, three, four, five. And we'll look for the color change. So, turn up the lamp a little bit, will you, Chesapeake?
All right, Doc.
Oh. Wow. Yes.
Well, Doc?
Well, it's tough luck, Matt. It's human blood. Hey, Matt, I thought we was going over to the Longhorn to talk to Mamie. How come the jail?
Yeah, she'll keep, Doc. She's not going anywhere.
Looks cut and dry to me, Matt.
It might not if you were in my shoes. Come on in, boys.
You know, Mr. Dillon, when I talked to the barkeep, Finnegan, he said that when he showed up this morning to open the saloon, that woman was already inside waiting for him. She told him to come back at 8 o'clock tonight, and he didn't see no sign of Herman Bleeker.
Oh, well, there's another nail in your coffin, Matt.
Doc, if you keep this up, I'm going to deputize you and take you along with me.
He sure can have my job, Mr. Dillon.
No, you don't. I will not lift a hand in anger against a woman.
Especially that woman.
Keep thinking we could still be wrong somehow.
Oh, real diehard.
Look, now suppose Herman hurt himself some way.
How?
And he wanted to get away by himself and recuperate.
Where?
And suppose he didn't want anybody to know about it.
Why?
So he decided to stay with some friend.
Who?
And, well, maybe... come on, Chester, let's go. There she is at the end of the bar.
What are you going to do, Mr. Dillon?
Take her in, Chester. Maybe she'll talk when she's arrested. I got to get that gun away from her some way.
It's not going to be easy.
It's got to be done. I've never drawn a gun on a woman yet, and I'm not starting now. I could just manage to... I don't know. There might be a chance. Stick close to me, Chester.
Yes, Mr. Dillon.
Well, Marshal! Mighty glad you dropped back in.
I was just wondering how you were getting along, Miss
Lee. Like a kid with two tongues and an all-day sucker. Say, now tell me, did you find that little weasel Herman Bleeker?
I thought you told me he'd left town.
Oh, well, I was just guessing, Mr. Dillon. He said something about planning to. Here, step up and have a shot of poison.
No, thank you, thank you. As a matter of fact, I came back here for a particular purpose. Chester and I have a little bet on.
Mr. Dillon, we...
What kind of a bet is it, Marshal?
Well, it was on about that shooting trick of yours, hitting the center of that playing card, you know? Chester figures that it was a fluke of luck. He's betting me that you can't do it five times in a row.
Well, we'll soon settle that. The card's still up there. Stand aside, boys! Mamie's gonna live up for shooting irons and get out of the way! Get down there, Curly! All right. There's one. Couple of them.
You're doing fine so far.
How are you doing down there, boys?
All dead center so far.
Say, you there, whatever your name is,
What do you think of your bet now?
Well, I guess I just kind of lost my head, Miss Mamie.
Well, three down, two to go. There's four. And one more. Oh, yeah.
Well, what are you stopping now for, Mamie?
Well, I got some rules I go by, Marshal. One of them's never to fire my last shot and leave my gun empty.
Yeah, I see. Well, that's a pretty good idea, I guess.
Sorry to lose your bet for you, Marshal.
I'm convinced. Well, I guess that didn't quite...
Chester. Miss Mamie, I guess you're not a gambler yourself, huh?
Who says so? I'll take a fair bet at even odds any day of the week and twice in Philadelphia.
Well, in that case, I'll make you one. I got a pretty fair gun here. Or at least I thought so till I saw yours in action.
Well, I'd say yours every bit as good as mine.
Well, then how about a bet? Your gun against mine on a one-cut high card, huh?
Well, now, how? I didn't...
Of course, it's all right with me if you'd rather back out on it.
Who's backing out? You got yourself a bet, Mr. Dillon. Finnegan! Shuffle us a deck.
Okay, then, Mamie.
The better a fight, Mamie never backs out.
There you are, Miss Mamie.
Now, who goes first, Mr. Dillon?
Ladies, always.
All right. If you're a friend, Lester will cut him for us once.
It's Chester.
Never mind. Cut the cards.
Yes, sir. Ma'am.
Now, let's see what we've got.
Jack of spades. That's not bad.
Plenty good, Marshal. Plenty good enough to beat anything you can...
King of diamonds.
All right. I'm beat. Fair and square. You won yourself a gun.
Thank you. Here, Chester, will you take it?
Yes, sir.
And now the handcuffs.
Here, no!
Maybe you're under arrest.
Why, you of all the sidewinds and double-crossing backhanded lawless!
Mamie! Now, you're going to stay fastened to me until I get you in a cell, so you might as well make the best of it.
Why, you...
And as far as that's concerned, you'll be safer in jail than out of it once word gets around.
What?
People here in Dodge City thought a lot of Herman Bleeker.
That little sawed-off groundhog!
That's no excuse for killing him in cold blood.
What?
You heard him, Mamie. You killed me.
Bleeker!
This is the biggest night of my whole life. To hear somebody finally shut Mamie up and make her like it.
The marshal's a gentleman, you little weasel! He knows how to talk to a lady.
And to hear you say how much the town thinks of me, Mr. Dillon.
What's this all about, Herman?
Well,
I'll tell you what it's all about. Yes. This little grubworm ran out on me in Cincinnati 3 years ago. Like to broke my heart. I've been hunting him ever since, and last night I found him. I wailed the living daylights out of him.
Yeah, he looks like it. But why did you bury his clothes?
Mr. Dillon, would you want to be married to a man that dressed like that?
She pretty near murdered me, though, Mr. Dillon. I've been up there in bed all day, just too bruised and embarrassed to hobble downstairs.
Oh, we had our ups and downs, Marshal, me and Herman. You know how it is.
Yeah. Chester, give me the keys to the handcuffs, will you?
Yes, sir, I got them right here. Well, I guess they're over in the...
What's the matter, Chester?
Oh, Mr. Dillon, when we were digging out there, I guess I must have lost him.
Chester, can't you file that thing any faster?
You might just well relax, Mr. Dillon. Took a half hour to get that one off Miss Mamie's wrist.
Oh, no. All right. But just hurry.
I'm filing as fast as I can.
Matt. Oh,
Mamie gave me this bottle of Irish here to make the waiting a little easier. And it's Jameson's.
Oh, well, fine, Doc. Fine. Chester, let that go for a minute, huh? And open it up.
Yes, Mr. Dillon.
Can you imagine it, boys? Little Herman Bleeker married for years to a woman like that.
Yeah, I don't wonder. Oh, I'd get nightmares.
Here you go, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, thank you, Chester.
Doc?
Oh, thank you.
Well, gentlemen, here's to the weaker sex.
Mr. Dillon, which one is that?
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Les Crutchfield, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Jeanette Nolan as Mamie, with John Daner, Ralph Moody, and Byron Kane. Parley Bayer is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Clancy Cassell speaking. And remember, Broadway is My Beat brings you startling mysteries Saturday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
I'm glad those crickets took off. I mean, those things... It was like Invasion of the Giant Crickets in that program. They should have just called that show Giant Crickets instead of Hinkadoo, starring William Conrad.
That's what Hinkadoo means. It means cricket.
Oh, Giant Crickets. Mm-hmm. October 10th, 1952. That's Gunsmoke. It's heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more of the WGN Radio Theater. So I saw a movie this week, Lisa.
Yeah?
I went to the movies by myself.
I don't mind doing that.
Do you do that? It's the first
time.
It's the first time I've ever done that.
I saw Lady Bird by myself.
You just went there?
Did
you put an L on your forehead like I did?
No.
I did.
No.
Anyway, I was like in this theater by myself.
Yeah.
It was the first time I've ever done that.
Why?
I don't know. I guess it was fine, but
it's not really a social event anyway.
I've never gone to a movie by myself.
So how did it feel?
It was a little...
I think it's kind of liberating.
But
I like it.
I think I would do it again.
Really?
Yeah.
I liked it.
You know what's a great thing about going to the movies by yourself?
Nobody talks to
Nobody talks to you. Yeah. Because
people annoy you a lot.
Oh, yeah. I'm easily annoyed.
When I went to see that movie alone was the time that there was a man. He was sitting with his wife. He got up in the middle to take a phone call. He comes back in the theater, sits down next to
me. Thinks you're his wife.
And says to me, oh, you know, so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. And I just looked at him. And I kind of giggled a little bit and then just went back to the movie. And like 5 minutes goes by and he looks over to me. He goes, I think I'm in the wrong seat. So it was kind of fun. I liked that.
So you know what movie I saw?
I will take a guess. Mm-hmm. You did not see The Greatest Showman.
No.
Because that's what I saw.
No.
No. You saw Three Billboards.
No, I wish I saw that. I'm going to go see that.
Okay.
But I was looking for a theater around me that had it, and nowhere around me had it.
Oh, well, it just won some
awards
tonight, so it'll be around. Okay, what did you say?
I saw The Shape of Water.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it. I really want to.
Well, I had mixed emotions about it because a friend of mine is the lead in that movie, Michael Shannon, and he's incredibly good. He's such a good bad guy in it.
Right.
The main girl, I don't know who she is. She's like a newcomer, maybe. I don't know. I've never seen her in anything else. But there's other people that you'll recognize.
The girl who falls in love with
So it's almost like, did you ever see the
monster movie?
Well, did you ever see the movie Creature from the Black Lagoon?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so it's almost like a updated version of that movie, only it's a love story. It's actually a love story.
I know.
Believe I went to see a love story?
Did you?
Roger,
that's probably
did you see
why
this
you didn't
movie?
Love it.
Did you see this movie?
Not yet. I'm waiting for the...
when it comes out on VCR.
No. We get copies of the movies because I'm an after SAG.
Yeah.
And the SAG Awards are coming up. The Screen Actors Guild's Awards are coming up. And I'm still waiting for copies of DVDs of the movies with the actors nominated in
them.
And we saw I, Tonya.
Oh, yeah.
A week ago.
Did you like it?
I loved it.
Okay.
And Rob, was it Margot Robbie? Right.
Yeah.
She's not hard to look at.
No,
but Allison Janney won Golden Globe tonight for her role in it as the mother.
Yes, I saw that.
And it was just a fantastic performance.
I'm a big fan of Golden Globes. Anyway, so what I was going to
say... That will shut us down
what,
fast, Roger.
What I am going to say, though, is this movie, The Shape of Water, mm-hmm. what was so great about it, the best part about the whole movie is the era. It's set in, it's set like right at the, I would say 1963, around there.
Oh.
Because we're just starting to, well, it was probably even before that, maybe 59 or 60, because we hadn't really, it was like the space age type of thing, and we were kind of at, trying to outdo the Russians at the mm-hmm. time. They had sent up, you know, Geiger, whatever his name is, you know, the Russian astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I should know this because I studied to be an astronaut in college. Oh, you know?
Did you know about
Look
that,
at how
Roger?
He read and,
took up space. But anyway...
Wait a minute. This is the sound effect of me...
Hitting your head
hitting
on the microphone.
On the microphone.
But in all sincerity, this movie was really interesting. It was mm-hmm. like...
Interesting doesn't sound like you loved
no,
it, though.
I didn't love it, but
interested.
I thought it was really good. I left
Maybe
there...
Maybe because it was the
was
first time
better?
You went alone.
Did you like it better than you thought you would?
No.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Because this same director, I can't remember his name right now. He's a, I think he's a Spanish director. He directed the movie Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, I
which
love that. It was
to
so
me
weird.
Is one of the greatest movies ever made. And I'm not really that into subtitled movies, but that movie was amazing. One of the best movies ever. And so he did this movie, The Shape of Water. And so I knew it was going to be good, but I thought, oh, maybe it's going to be on the level of Pan's Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. But it really wasn't.
Well, it was a different kind of movie.
But what I was going to say is the setting, you know, whoever did the set design and the costumes and all that from 59, 60,
mm-hmm.
and all the detail, it was amazing visually to watch. And the monster, whatever it is, the creature, was really cool.
All
right. Really, really cool. So anyway,
well, I have that to look forward to.
Yeah, and Michael Shannon, the lead in it, is a Chicago boy.
Yeah.
Great
okay.
guy. Yeah.
That's
so
right. I will look for him when it
all
comes
right.
in.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. Hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. And on this hour, we will have My Friend Irma from 1948, good comedy. In hour three, it's The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, and it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming film Paul, Apostle of Christ, which takes place primarily during Paul's last days.
Yeah, he doesn't play Paul, though.
No, he doesn't play Paul,
no,
but he
plays
does
Luke in it.
But he does star in the film.
Yes, he does.
I didn't say he played Paul.
I'm just I'm not correcting you.
It sounded
I'm just
like
adding
you were.
To what you were saying.
Okay, you're just letting us know that you know about this movie.
Right.
All right. And I know that you know this actor.
Yes.
So
all right. What
the
do they
winner
win?
Is going to get a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set.
Very good. 312-981-7200 is the number. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. He was the star of The Passion of the Christ, and he's heard here as Warden Hobbs in Escape Plan.
Welcome to the International Detainee Union Intake. I'm Warden Hobbs.
Who is that actor? 312-981-7200. Give us a call and win some Twilight Zone CDs. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
Welcome to the International Detainee Union Intake. I'm Warden Hobbs.
And we have Joanne on the line. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, wonderful. I couldn't believe that. I got through.
Oh, well, we're so watching, glad.
Yeah. I've been watching, listening to the show since day one. I love it.
Wow.
Oh, that is
great.
So nice.
Every Saturday and Sunday.
Wow. Fantastic.
That is, we are
Thank
going
you.
On 3 years. We marvel at that it's been almost 3 years, which is ridiculous because, you know, time flies when you're having fun. And
do you believe
we
that?
Do have fun here.
Lisa still allows me to co-host the show with her. Do you believe that?
I still put up with him.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. No, you're a good kid. You know, you play off of each other.
We're a pair of coconuts, the two of us.
Yes, yes.
That's for sure. But a couple of crazies. Joanne, who is that actor?
James Caviezel.
Yes, you are. Yeah, right? You are right. It's Jim Caviezel, and you are a winner. Mm-hmm. And we are so happy to send you. It's a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set. I don't know which 4 CDs you'll get. There's a whole bunch. But thank you so much for calling in. They are fantastic. Oh, you will love
thank
them.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Take
You're
care,
welcome,
Joanne.
John. Thank you.
Every weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Happy New Year to you. All right, it is time for My Friend Irma. It was a situation comedy show. It was set in Manhattan, came to radio in 1947, lasted all the way to 1954. There were movies and also a TV series revolved around this the show. Marie Wilson played Irma Peterson. She was a dim-witted blonde stenographer. And her roommate, played by Kathy Lewis, was Jane Stacy. And it was a very funny, really kind of heartwarming series of two girls living together, best friends in Manhattan, and with their day-to-day lives in New York City. So let's go back to October 18th, 1948. On this show, Irma has misplaced her boss's glasses. Part one now of My Friend Irma.
For the safety of your smile, use Pepsodent twice a day. See your dentist twice a year. Lever Brothers Company presents the Pepsodent show, My Friend Irma, created by Cy Howard and starring Marie Wilson as Irma with Joan Banks as Jane.
Friendship, friendship, just a perfect friendship. Why, another friendship's been forgotten. Theirs will still be hot.
Has their own circle of friends. Me, Jane Stacy, I'm a little different. I have a friend who goes around in circles. Now, please, don't get me wrong. My roommate, Irma Peterson, is a wonderful person, and I think the world of her. It's just that sometimes she does things that make me want to pop my top. For instance, the other night I was reading the National Geographic magazine, and I said, Irma, listen to this. A pearl diver has to hold his breath for 2 minutes just to get one little pearl. And Irma said,
oh, that's nothing. I know a girl had to keep her mouth shut for 6 weeks to get a necklace.
You see what I mean? Well, maybe today will be different. I've promised Irma I'd meet her for lunch, and right now I'm on my way to her office.
Miss Peterson! Miss Peterson!
Yes, Mr. Clyde?
Would you mind stepping in here for a moment with your pencil and notebook? Thank you, Miss Peterson. Take a letter to the Flamingo Hotel, Las Vegas.
All right, Mr. Clyde.
Do you have a cold?
No.
Then for heaven's sake, what are you whispering about?
Well, I understand you get more money when you're a confidential secretary.
Oh, brother. Incidentally, Miss Peterson, the hotel informs me that they sent me a night letter. Do you know anything about it?
Oh, yes, I received it this morning.
Well, why didn't you give it to me?
Well, it's a night letter, so I thought I'd wait until it gets dark. You're angry at me, aren't you, Mr. Clyde?
Angry? How could you tell?
You have cute little mannerisms like chewing your pipe stems into splinters and pulling your hair out.
I'm just getting ready for Halloween. And, Miss Peterson, while I'm telling you exactly what I think of you, I wanted you to know one thing. Why do you insist on starting all of my business correspondence with Dear Al?
Well, I can't help it. You see, Al's my boyfriend, and I keep thinking of him, and I guess I just do it without knowing it.
Very touching, Miss Peterson. But while you're in this office, I insist you forget your boyfriend, you understand?
But how can I when he's always on my mind?
Isn't that a little unfair to your boyfriend, keeping him in such a dark, lonely place?
Well, I never thought of it that way.
Now, look, Miss Peterson, I've stood enough of this. Everywhere I turn, I see that man's name. Al in my letters, Al in the files, Al on my memo pad. It's got to stop. Don't ever mention that name around here again.
All right, Mr. Al. I mean, Mr. Clyde.
Oh, Miss Peterson, will you please bring me a drink?
Well, certainly, Mr. Clyde. Would you like a Coke, or would you rather have a glass of ginger ale?
Ginger ale? For goodness sake, what on earth ails you? I mean, ails you. Now you got me doing it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Clyde.
Oh, never mind, never mind. Just bring me my glasses.
Your glasses?
Yes, they must be around here someplace.
Oh, well, come to think of it, I did see them. But now I can't remember what I did with them.
Oh, for the love of... Miss Peterson, I must have those glasses. I've got to be in court tomorrow. I can't read without them. Now, please, try and think.
All right. Now, let's see. Oh, maybe I put them in the filing cabinet under C.
C for glasses?
Mm-hmm.
Even knowing your insane filing system, that I cannot follow. C for glasses?
No, C for Christopher.
Miss Peterson, what are you blabbering about?
Well, you have to get glasses at an optician, and he must be a graduate from a college. And Columbia is the closest one to here, and it was named after Christopher Columbia. So I'll look under C.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
Well, it makes sense to me.
Look, please, see who's in the outer office, will you?
Yes, Mr. Clyde. Oh, hello, Jane. You're just in time.
Why, honey, is something wrong?
Oh, Mr. Clyde is furious. I misplaced his glasses. But he's been in a nasty mood all morning just because he dictated a letter to I.J. Fox and I mailed it to the zoo.
Is that you, Miss Stacy?
Yes, Mr. Clyde.
Will you step in here for a minute, please? Alone?
Excuse me, sweetie.
Please sit down, Miss Stacy. I'd like to talk to you.
I understand Irma has misplaced your eyeglasses.
Among other things. In all my life, I have never come across anyone so scatterbrained.
Well, maybe there are times when Irma isn't bright.
Bright? Miss Stacy, Marie Antoinette was smarter than that girl is after they cut her head off. And on top of that, she can't forget her boyfriend.
Oh, he's on her mind again.
Again. This morning, she typed a letter for me to the White House. I'm glad I checked it. It said, "To the President of the United States, Dear Al." No, she was bad enough, but now with this fellow on her mind, she's impossible. I'm firing her.
Firing her?
Yes, Miss Stacy, I'm firing her. How would you like to come and work for me?
Oh, well, thanks anyway, Mr. Clyde, but I wouldn't think of taking Irma's job. Why don't you give her another chance?
Another chance?
Please, Mr. Clyde. Irma means well, and she tries so hard. If she lost this job, it would crush her.
Oh.
Please?
Well, I suppose I'm a fool. All right. But remember, if she doesn't find my glasses before I go into that courtroom tomorrow morning, she's through.
Oh, we'll find them, Mr. Clyde. Maybe they're somewhere in the apartment. I'll take Irma home and we'll look for them.
Fine, fine. Say, by the way, Miss Stacy, does Irma give you much trouble around the house?
Oh, no. Irma's perfectly normal.
You mean she doesn't do things that kind of startle you?
No.
Well, I was only wondering. Good day. By the way, Miss Stacy, how did you get that lump on your head?
Oh, well, we were doing some house cleaning, and Irma found a horseshoe, and she threw it over her left shoulder for good luck. Well, we're home, and we're still trying to find Mr. Clyde's glasses. Irma is looking around frantically, and I have never seen anyone go through such motions. Right now, she's in the corner, squatting up and down like a jack-in-the-box. Irma, for goodness sakes, why do you keep bending down and jumping up like that?
Well, I'm trying to look under the sofa, but the radio next door keeps playing the Star Spangled Banner.
Come in.
It's only me, Professor Kravatsky.
Hello, Janie and Irma, my two little birds. One with the grace of a bobolink, the other with the mind of a missing link.
Look, Professor, you can have your little joke, but right now we're not in the mood for levity. Irma lost her boss's glasses, and if she doesn't find them, she's going to lose her job, too.
Oh, that's terrible. What are you going to do about it?
We've gone over this room from top to bottom.
Oh, that's wonderful.
What do you mean?
Having a room with a top and a bottom.
Please, Professor, Irma is in serious trouble.
I understand, Jenny. Maybe I can help. Irma, darling, to concentrate, first you must clear your mind of everything.
All right. There. I think it's empty now.
Good. Now, I will use what they call the association of ideas. For instance, when I say salt, you say pepper. When I say bread, you say butter.
Oh, I get it.
All right, now here we go. Black.
White.
Dog.
Cat.
Wonderful. Now, glasses.
Al.
Irma.
Peterson.
Stop.
Go.
Please! Now, wait.
Why, something wrong?
Oh, please, Professor, you're just wasting time. Can't you see everything is Al, Al, Al? Irma, why don't you get him off your mind once and for all?
Oh, I can't, Jane. To me, Al is like something unwordly.
Yes, he seems a little weird to me, too. Professor, tell her she's completely wrong in her estimation of Al.
Now, Janie, darling, this is not so easy to do. You see, when a person is in love, they are blind. Oh, I recall when I was courting my ex-wife, Sonia. To me, she looked like a little buttercup. Not till after I married her did I find out that cup held 300 pounds of butter. So you see, Irma, you have to look twice.
But can't you understand? I love Al. To me, Al is the sun in the sky, the stars, the moon, the Milky Way. To me, Al is the whole plantation.
Planetarium, sweetie.
You know what I mean. If I could only be sure that, well, someday he would ask me to pop the question. After all, you know, I'm not getting any younger. I know I'm an adult because no matter how much Al makes me bend down when we go on a bus, I have to pay full fare.
Look, sweetie. Come in.
Hello, Jane. Professor? Hiya, chicken.
Hello, Al, honey. Oh, Al.
What's the matter, chicken?
Al, Irma lost Mr. Clyde's glasses.
So what? Refused to get excited.
And if they're not found, she loses her job.
Loses her job? My goodness, what are we all standing here for? Do something. Let's look.
Oh, Al, it's true. You only love me because of my job with Mr. Clyde.
Now, hold it, chicken. How can you think of such a thing? I'd love you no matter who you were working for. Besides, it's only a matter of time when one of my deals goes through. We won't need your job.
Not another one of your deals, Al. What is it this time? Painting gravel black and selling it for coal?
No. Got too many friends that are forced to make that gravel. You know, breaking big rocks into little ones. No, but this deal can't miss. It's for married men with nagging wives. A specially prepared lump of glue that looks and tastes like a lump of sugar. He drops it in her coffee and picks up his morning paper while his loving wife sits there with her mouth shut. How's it sound, chicken? Hey, what's the idea of her running into the bedroom like that? I told her worse deals than that one.
Oh, Al, it's not your deals, it's you.
Oh, me?
You might as well know it, Al. The whole trouble with Irma is that she worries so much about marrying you that she can't think of anything else.
But, Jane...
Now, let me finish. It's the same way at the office. That's why she can't remember anything. And frankly, I don't think she'll ever find her boss's glasses until she's straightened out romantically.
Romantically, huh? You mean if I was to propose to Chicken, it would clarify things and make it possible for her to keep on working?
Yes.
Well, that sounds attractive. After all, I do love my chicken.
Then why don't you prove it?
Well, how?
Marry her or get out of her life.
You're right, Jane, and I've reached the decision. Chicken!
What is it, Al?
Chicken, Jane here has just made me see the light. How would you like to marry me?
Oh, Al, at last you've proposed. Let's go.
Yeah, well, hold it, chicken. Before we can go through with this, I got to get permission.
Permission? Who from, Al?
My guardians.
Your guardians?
Haven't got time to explain. Must see them right away. We'll have the answer in a half an hour.
Oh, all right, Al. I'll be sitting here waiting to hear from you. Don't disappoint me, honey.
I won't. How's about a kiss for good luck, chicken?
All right, Al.
Thanks, chicken.
Quack, 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 quack.
What's the idea of that?
I can't help it, Al. Every time you kiss me, I get goose pimples.
That's the first portion of My Friend Irma, October 18th, 1948, starring Marie Wilson, and also Joan Banks is her friend Jane Stacy there. For a while, Kathy Lewis played that part, but then Joan Banks took it over. Actually, Joan Banks, did you know this, Lisa, was married to Frank Lovejoy.
No, I did not know that.
Beats, yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back, and then it's more of the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, so it's official. We talked to Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Oil Dry, parent company of Cat's Pride. And beginning the first week of February, we are going to switch our contest every hour.
So it's going from what to what, Carl?
So right now it's called Cat's Pride Celebrity Scoop.
Right.
And it's going to be called Cat's Pride's Crack the Code.
Quote. Wait,
did I say code?
It's crack the quote.
The quote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we'll have people call in. We'll tell you the movie, right? Let's say Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Right.
You'll call in and someone will get on the air with us. Lisa will read you three lines, three different quotes from that could possibly be in the movie, but only one of them is correct.
Yep.
Right? The other two are made up by her.
Yep. And I have a good imagination.
Yes, you do. And then contestant, our listener, tries to guess which one of the quotes they try to crack the quote.
Right. See which one is from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And then we will actually play a clip of that quote
right
on the air.
The actuality, right, as they call it, yep, right out of the movie. And if you get it right,
you win. And if you get it wrong, you still win.
Yeah. But
it's all win.
Bragging rights, though, if you get it right. Yeah. No, either way, whether you get it right or wrong, you still get a nice prize. So that's going to be the new
I'm really excited about it.
At the beginning of each hour.
We are going to retire the jingle.
Yeah, the jingle's going away.
The jingle. I know some of you love it. Some of you hate it. I'm going to leave it at that. It's tired a little bit. We've been using it for a while. So it's time to just put it to the side.
Well, let's have a ceremony for it.
We will lay it to rest.
Yeah.
And we have some new ideas of how to introduce this, but it'll be a lot of fun.
So I think we'll launch it the first week of February,
yep,
right?
First weekend.
All right. Let's get back now to My Friend Irma.
The professor, Mrs. O'Reilly, Irma, and myself, waiting to hear if Al is going to marry Irma. Naturally, we're all terribly excited, but Irma accepts it as an accomplished fact. Right now, she's checking over her hope chest, and such contents you have never seen. Now, I can understand the negligee, and the cookbook, and even the Chinese checkers, but this I cannot fathom. Irma, what's the idea of the two cans of Strong Heart?
Well, some of my friends, my married friends, tell me it's a dog's life and I don't want to go hungry.
Great. Oh, gee, I wish Al would show up or at least call. I can't for the life of me understand why a man his age has to get permission. What do you think, Mrs. O'Reilly?
Well, it's a sentimental thing. I remember when I was a girl and I wanted to get married, I had to get my father's permission, and it wasn't easy.
Of course it wasn't easy. He was in the middle of building the pyramids, and he didn't want to be disturbed.
Oh, Professor, you keep me in stitches.
Well, you need something to tie you together.
Why, you phony old Fritz Kreisler, you.
Oh, please, Mrs.
Oh, hold it, hold it, will you? The phone is ringing. Hello?
May I speak to Miss Peterson?
Oh, just a moment. Irma, it's your boss. Hello?
Miss Peterson, I'm beside myself. I have all those briefs to read in court tomorrow, and I must have my glasses. Where did you put them?
I can't remember.
Well, if you don't find them soon, you're fired. Do you hear? Fired.
Oh, Mr. Clyde, there's something I'd like to ask you.
What?
Well, before you fire me, may I have my vacation? I'm getting married. Mr. Clyde!
Did he hang up?
Yes, I guess he was so choked up with joy he couldn't talk. Come in.
Back again, folks.
Oh, Al, honey. Oh, Al, what's a good word?
Ain't no good word, chicken. Matrimony is out.
Out?
Just finished pleading with my guardian.
Al, just who is your guardian?
The unemployment office.
The unemployment office?
Well, certainly. They handle all of my finances.
Hell, you mean...
Chicken, I practically got down on my knees. I said, I got a girl I want to marry. Will you double my allowance? They said no. So I made him a great offer. I said, fellas, if you double my check, I promise you I will turn down the next two jobs that come my way. He just mocked me.
Well, who are you calling?
Only one man who can help us now.
Who, Al?
Who else but... Hello, Joe. Al, got a problem. Joe, I want to marry Irma. Could you give me a job? Yes, certainly this is Al. What kind of job? What job? Joe, I can't hear well. There's a bad connection. You say the last 10 men who worked for you were executives? Huh? Oh, they were executed. No, Joe, want something with more of a future. Thank you, and goodbye, noble friend.
He has nothing else?
Looks like it can never be, chicken.
Oh, well, don't say that. Jane.
What, sweetie?
I'm desperate. Can't two people live as cheap as one?
In the case of Al, I think yes, because believe me, there is the cheapest guy that ever lived.
Don't want to be cruel, but think it's for the best, chicken.
Oh, perfectly all right, Al. Let us not be bitter. Let us be gay. Care for an apple?
No, chicken. Think I'll be running along.
Oh, all right, Al. Good luck, fellow. Stout upper chin. And as the Hawaiians say aloha, that's French for auf Wiedersehen.
Goodbye, chicken.
Irma, I'm stunned. You were magnificent. And I thought you'd make a scene.
Me? Don't be ridiculous. He's gone, so he's gone.
Yes, he's gone.
He's gone?
Well, here we go again, folks. She's back in the bedroom crying her little heart out.
Men, the brutes. They're only after what they can get.
What are you worrying about? You haven't got it.
Hold still, you. Be still. Janie, darling, what can we do to help Irma?
Well, frankly, Mrs. O'Reilly, I don't know what to say. Al has her so upset she can't remember where Mr. Clyde's glasses are, and... Well, right now it looks to me like she's going to lose both her job and her boyfriend. I'm afraid the poor girl will get sick.
Sick? My little Irma, sick. Janie, what can we do?
I think Al is our only salvation. We've got to get him to propose to Irma. Oh, if only I knew how.
Well, there are many shortcuts to a man's heart.
And how would you know?
For your information, when I was a young girl, I had plenty of beaux. Of course, they're all gone now. And I've only got one bow left.
This we know.
You do?
Yes, the bows that have gone are the ones you wore in your hair. The bow that is left is the one in your legs.
Now listen here, you.
Oh, yes, go ahead. Keep it up, the two of you. Don't worry about Irma in there crying her heart out.
We are sorry, Janie.
I thought as friends you could momentarily forget your own differences and help me do something for her.
Oh, we're ashamed of ourselves, Janie, really.
I don't want you to be ashamed. I just want advice about how we can get Al to marry the girl.
Well, now, Janie, a man will get married for three reasons. Number one, he wants children. Number two, he wants companionship. Or number three, he doesn't know what he wants and she talks him into it.
What are you driving at?
Well, the Martins downstairs, their son just came back from a honeymoon trip to Niagara Falls, and they took movies of it.
Yeah?
Well, I was thinking that if we could show the whole movies here to Al and Irma, Al might slip into a romantical mood and Irma will have a husband.
Oh, you mean seeing Niagara Falls will give him the idea?
Oh, don't be ridiculous. I haven't got too much faith in the power of suggestion.
Now, don't say that, Janie. Many a man doesn't know he's hungry till he walks past the restaurant. And what have we got to lose?
Well, nothing, I guess. All right, let's try. I'll go ask the Martins for the equipment, and Professor, you find Al.
Okay.
And I'll do my part, too. I'll go down and bake a cake.
That's a good idea. Now, if Al gets belligerent, we'll have something heavy to throw at him.
Let's go.
projector equipment is all set up and we're ready to start the reel of Niagara Falls. Al is seated beside Irma. He looks a little mildewed. It seems he was sleeping on a park bench and they turned on the sprinklers. Irma has her little blonde head on his shoulder. She's wearing her most enticing perfume. Some girls wear Taboo. Irma is wearing Grab You. We're all anxiously waiting to see if the honeymoon film will do the trick. All right, Professor, out with the lights.
Okay.
Oh, T.L., isn't this romantic?
Kinda.
I can't see you, but your hands are cold.
Chicken, that's a bunch of bananas you're holding. All right, here goes.
And now watch, everybody.
Now, that is the station at Niagara Falls. And look, that's the falls. 65,800,000 gallons of water flow over it every minute. This is only topped by the amount that comes out of the leaking pipes in my room.
Oh, what a fascinating place. Right, Al?
Kinda.
Oh, how well I remember the place. I went there with my first husband, Clancy. I remember him saying he'd give me a kiss for every drop that went over the falls. Or was it he'd kiss me if I dropped over the falls? Oh, what's the difference? It's a wonderful place, Al.
Yes. Look at all those happy couples.
It's enough to give a man ideas. Right, Al? Could be.
Al, honey, put your head on my shoulder.
All right, chicken.
Oh, it feels so good. I don't know what it is, but when you're beside me, I get the feeling I'm not alone.
Know what you mean, chicken?
Al.
What?
Look at the screen.
Oh, yeah.
See that little boat going in and out of the falls?
Yeah.
Doesn't that give you any ideas?
It does.
Really? You mean?
Yeah. It'd be a swell way to smuggle liquor into Canada.
What? Now, look here, Al. You can make a fool out of Irma, but we've had just about enough. Now, if you don't mind, please leave.
No, Jane, I want him to stay. Oh, Al, even if you won't marry me now, you saved my job for me.
Oh, me? What are you talking about?
Come in. Oh, it's you, Mr. Clyde.
See here, Miss Peterson, it's 6 o'clock. If you haven't found my glasses, you're through. I can't wait any longer.
Oh, Mr. Clyde, I know where they are now, and all because of Al. My Al.
What do you mean?
Well, we were sitting here looking at pictures of Niagara Falls and all that water, and I realized that Al had never seen cooler to me. And then suddenly I remembered where the glasses were, under the water cooler.
How did they get there?
Well, I was taking them out to be fixed, and I stopped at the water cooler to get a cup of water.
But Al was on your mind.
And you got confused.
So I made a perfectly natural mistake.
What, by your standards, is a perfectly natural mistake?
Well, I put your glasses in the wastebasket and took the cup to the optician.
Winning smile is a Pepsodent smile. Again and again, people have found the smile that wins is the Pepsodent smile. That's borne out by the vote of thousands who tried new Pepsodent toothpaste with Arium in a recent nationwide test. These people were given plain, unlabeled tubes of Pepsodent and were asked to compare it with the brands they were using at home. When their votes came in, Pepsodent won by the overwhelming average of 3-1. These people say new Pepsodent tastes better, makes their breath cleaner, and their teeth brighter than any other toothpaste they tried. Remember, that's not just our opinion. That's what people say. They say it 3-1. They've seen Pepsodent with Arium remove the film that makes teeth look dull. Uncover new brightness in their smiles. Try it and you will see the smile that wins is the Pepsodent smile.
Well, Irma still has her job, and Irma is still single. Well, that's all right with me. But I told her just what I thought. I said, Irma, if I were you, I'd forget all about Al. Why don't you play the field? And Irma said,
Jane, you've got the wrong game. I don't want to play the field. I just want to go into a huddle.
And you know, huddle befuddle, if there's anyone whose mind is in a muddle, it's my friend Irma.
Irma is produced and directed by Cy Howard. Mark Levy writes the script with Stanley Adams and Roland McLean, and it's brought to you by Pepsodent Toothpaste with Irium, another fine product of Lever Brothers Company. Marie Wilson is starred as Irma with Joan Banks as Jane. The part of Al was played by John Brown. Hans Conried was heard as Professor Kropotkin and Gloria Gordon as Mrs. O'Reilly. Music was under the direction of Lud Gluskin. An easy way to ensure your future is to invest in United States savings bonds. When you invest in United States government, your investment is sure to reap a profitable harvest. You'll probably remember the high rate of interest you were paid on the war bonds you bought during the war years. Well, that same rate still prevails. You can't go wrong when you purchase a United States savings bond because every one you buy is backed by the United States government, which in itself offers you complete security with every bond you purchase. This is Wendell Niles. We want you to tune in 1 hour earlier next week and listen to the Lux Radio Theater, followed by the Pepsodent show, My Friend Irma. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's My Friend Irma from October 18th, 1948. It was sponsored by Pepsodent, and it starred Kathy Lewis isn't in this show. Marie Wilson and Joan Banks. Kathy Lewis, who usually played in these episodes as Jane Stacy, was not in this particular episode. Here's an interesting name, Lud Gluskin. He did a lot of music for these radio shows. Have you ever heard of anybody named Lud?
Lud.
L-U-D, Lud.
Yeah, no.
And then his last name was Gluskin.
Yeah, that's...
That's not so bad, Gluskin. But
when you add it with Lud Glus.
I never heard of...
Lud and Glus together.
Never heard of anybody named Lud. Hey, Lud. What's up? Hey, Lud, what are you doing?
As a nickname?
No, it was his name, Lud.
Know.
Okay. Anyway, Alan Reed was in that. Fred Flintstone, the voice of Fred Flintstone.
I heard him.
Was Mr. Clyde, her boss. She lost his glasses.
Yeah.
All right. Hope you enjoyed My Friend Irma, a good comedy. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. One of our very smart listeners texted in and said, hey, Carl, you dummy. Lud is a common name, nickname for Ludwig.
Well, one person
said... Like Ludwig
said,
von Beethoven.
Right. One person said Ludwig or Ludwig, and the other person said Ludwick.
Ludwick.
Mm.
I've heard of Ludwig.
What?
Ludwig, what? Ludwig von Beethoven.
That's...
I have to do it in a German accent.
That's a German. I was going to say you need to have a German accent.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah.
Let me see. Well, Ludwig. I got to get my... Hang on. I got to get my German
You have
accent.
To spit when you say it. But
Ludwig
not my, but
not von
my direction.
Beethoven.
Try that again.
Ludwig. Ludwig. Ludwig?
Mm-hmm.
Vig or Wig?
Vig.
I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway, it's a common nickname.
Mm-hmm.
It's a short version
so
of
not,
Ludwig.
So instead of saying Lud.
Hey, Lud.
It's probably Lud.
Lud.
Ludwig.
No, they said Lud Gluskin. He said Lud.
I know, but that may be the American pronunciation of Lud.
What is this fascination with names with us?
No, it's
Harlow,
you.
Harlow.
I love Lud. Harlow.
Yeah, Harlow would be a good girl name or guy name.
Mm-hmm. Better for
if
a
I
girl.
Have any more kids.
Mm-hmm.
If I have any more kids.
Do you think that's a possibility?
I'm trying to think if that's a possibility mm-hmm. or not. I mean, it is a possibility. I'll just tell you that.
You mean a physical possibility?
It's physically possible.
Is it an emotional possibility?
No.
I didn't think so.
Not at all.
That's what I thought.
No, but you know, you never know. I might meet the right girl. And
I tell you
that
all the time.
She still wants to have babies. And she talks me into it.
See, you never know.
You never know.
Somebody wrote in that she or he went to school with a gal named Ludmilla.
Ludmilla.
Ludmilla. L-U-D-M-I-L-L-A.
Wow.
So there That's, you go.
Huh.
You can Lud. Genderize the
Lud
name Lud.
Gluskin. That's a name for you right there. Yeah. You know what? Your great-grandfather. Is it your great-grandfather or great-granduncle or what?
Nero Wolfe?
Yeah, he's in...
It's my great-great-granduncle.
Next hour, we're going to listen to Lisa's great-great-granduncle on the adventures of Nero Wolfe from 1951. Sidney Greenstreet playing Nero Wolfe. I think he was German. Greenstreet.
No.
No?
No.
No, he was English, I think.
No, he's not.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolfe.
Hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. It is 1:07 in the morning. Thanks for staying up late with us. And we have the new Adventures of Nero Wolfe from 1951, starring Sidney Greenstreet in this hour. And it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film A Simple Favor about a blogger who discovers her best friend has vanished.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, and the winner will get a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set.
This actress, actually, when I was in Los Angeles a few weeks ago,
yes,
I went to the Pitch Perfect premiere.
Okay.
And this actress walked right past me. She's teeny weeny.
She is.
She's so cute.
She's great.
So little and teeny weeny.
Are you blushing
She's like
yet?
A little tiny person.
Carl's cheeks are getting pink again.
I mean, and she had high heels on, and I towered over her. She walked like right by me.
I bet she walked right by.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She, didn't
she
even,
just kept going.
Yeah. Anyway.
Did she pause?
Unfortunately, she kept going.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. If you want to win some Twilight Zone CDs, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She is the star of the Pitch Perfect film series.
Still moving the flavor with the homies Blackstreet and Teddy, the original Rum Shakers.
All right. Who is that actress? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Still moving the flavor with the homies Blackstreet and Teddy, the original Rum Shakers.
which Pitch Perfect was that?
I think it's the first one.
The first one. Hi, Paul.
Hi there.
Hi. Yeah.
Oh. It's Anna Kendrick.
It's Anna Kendrick. You are absolutely right. And you are a winner. You have won the Twilight Zone 4-CD set. Congratulations.
Awesome.
Are you an Anna Kendrick fan as well?
Meh.
Eh, okay.
I could take her or leave her, but as soon as he said very short, I'm like, oh, yeah.
That's the one. Yeah, she's teeny.
She's teeny weeny.
I saw Pitch Perfect 1 and 2, but I'm not running out or anything to see 3. I mean...
After the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, it just sounds absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, I think 2 is my limit with that, but okay. But I'm sure there'll be plenty of people to support the show. But thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, thanks for the gift. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks,
nice
Paul.
To hear from you.
Happy New Year. All right, Paul's a big winner. He won some Twilight Zone CDs, and we have a good radio show for you now. Good Detective Adventure of Nero Wolfe. Sidney Greenstreet starred as Rex Stout's gargantuan gourmet, and the radio series first aired in 1943 with J.B. Williams as the obese detective. A little later, Santos Ortega took over, and then later than that, Louis Van Ruten. But the most successful series was that of Sidney Greenstreet playing the role. Nero Wolfe solved crimes with an attention to detail that rivaled the great Sherlock Holmes, and Wolfe refused to leave his elegant brownstone on business, sending his assistant, Archie Goodwin, out to do his legwork. That's nice.
That
just
sounds
send
like
other
what you
people.
Do to me.
Sit
Lisa,
back.
Lisa, do this. Lisa, do that.
Lisa, could you look up this thing for me? Could you? Lisa's really, but see, because you're so smart and yeah. you're so good with apps
Tom Sawyer.
And all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Wolf and Goodwin were resurrected in a 1945 mutual offering starring Francis X. Bushman and Elliot Lewis. But as I say, the Sidney Greenstreet series that began in 1950 was the most popular and probably the best. We have an episode now from April 20th, 1951. This is called The Case of the Lost Heir. Here's Sidney Greenstreet in part one of The New Adventures of Nero Wolf.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell brings you mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolf's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Mr. Horace Crail. Does Mr. Crail know Mr. Wolf? Oh, I see.
What is it, Archie?
A guy named Horace Crail. His secretary says he wants to talk to you.
What about?
I don't know.
Ask.
Mr. Wolf's rather busy right now, but I'll give him a message if you wish. Yes. Yeah. Oh, wait a second, Mr. Wolf.
What?
Black on red and red on black.
Archie, this is solitaire.
So?
Solitaire is a game that is played by one single person alone. If I wish to put a red card on a red card or a black card on a black card...
You're cheating.
Of course I am cheating. What is the message Mr. Horace Crail, secretary, asked you to convey?
Just that he wants to see you.
In a rather tragic sense, I suppose he does.
Why tragic?
In that he wants to see me. He is blind. Tell him to come here at his own convenience.
Okay. What does Mr. Crail want to see Mr. Wolf about? A murder? A murder that may still be prevented.
Archie.
Just a second. What?
I have run the cards out perfectly. Is it his own murder Mr. Crail wants us to prevent?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that renowned genius who is the bulkiest, balkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-borne mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolf, created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
Once in a long while, Mr. Wolf and I talk about this affair. When we do, we call it The Case of the Lost Heir. But I don't think the title's quite adequate. For me, it ought to be called The Case of the Gone Goose. And I was the goose.
Well, Archie, do you see any red on red or black on black?
Nope.
So?
So what?
You irritate me, Archie.
Okay, you won your little game of solitaire perfectly, as you say. Now, who is Horace Crail?
A prominent industrialist. If you read the papers, you would know.
Horace Crail. Oh, yeah, the Crail Company.
Exactly.
How did you know he was blind, if he is?
The papers have carried the story. The headlines read, Blind Father Welcomes Lost Daughter.
Oh, yeah, I remember. A few days ago, there was a picture, too.
I thought you'd remember the girl, at least.
Well, if it's the one I remember, I remember.
Archie.
Oh, well, it probably isn't true. By the way, let me tell you what I found out about the facts of life.
The door, Archie.
Mr. Crail is here to see Mr. Wolf.
Oh, yes, come in.
This is Mr. Crail. I'm his secretary, Hugh Gaines. There's a step here, Mr. Crail.
Of course. Who is this man?
I'm Archie Goodwin, Mr. Wolf's assistant. Mr. Wolf's waiting for you.
Where is Mr. Wolf, Mr. Goodwin?
I led the way. The blind man and his secretary followed. Mr. Horace Crail was tall, thin, white-haired. His face was heavily lined, but the lines were not those of care or worry. He wore very dark glasses through which he might not have been able to see even if he had had his sight. Hugh Gaines, the secretary, was in his late 20s, surprisingly young and surprisingly handsome for the kind of a job he had. I led them into Mr. Wolf's office, made the introductions, and sat them down.
Well, Mr. Crail, what can I do for you?
As you see, Mr. Wolf, I'm blind.
Need I say you have my deepest sympathy?
I don't give a hoot for your sympathy, Mr. Wolf. Thank you, of course. I mention my condition merely because it affects the position in which I find myself.
Go on.
You.
Yes, Mr. Crail?
Tell Mr. Wolf about my daughter. Oh, incidentally, Mr. Wolf, I asked my secretary to do this because in this way you will get a first-hand account.
Now, let's see. A few days ago, Tuesday to be exact, at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, a young woman walked into the house and said she wanted to see her father. I spoke to her myself. She said her name was Magda Crail. I asked her certain questions.
Why, Mr. Gaines?
He asked her questions because he thought, and I thought, that my daughter died 13 years ago. Oh, either the girl who came back to me is my daughter, or she is an imposter, and she belongs in jail.
Is there any doubt in your mind about it?
Of course. That's why I'm here.
On the telephone, you said something about preventing murder.
Well, I have a stepson named Anthony George to whom I intended to leave my money. Not because I liked him. Simply because I had nobody else to leave it to.
Except your daughter.
Except my daughter. If she is my daughter.
We were talking about murder.
I was talking about my daughter and my stepson.
Same thing, I take it.
Maybe, possibly. I don't know.
Mr. Crail.
Yes?
I am not a wealthy man, but I am certainly able to make ends meet.
Yeah? What do you mean?
Explain, Archie.
I think Mr. Wolf means that if you don't want to be frank with him, he'd rather not waste his time.
Mr. Wolf, I apologize if I've seemed to spar with you.
Phooey.
See, a blind man can only judge by what he hears and smells and feels.
So?
Well, I must be a little more cautious than I would have to be otherwise.
I'm sorry, Mr. Crail. Patience is not one of my virtues. Now, about your daughter or your non-daughter. What's her name?
Magda. She calls herself Magda Crail, which, of course, was my daughter's name.
What makes you think she isn't your daughter?
Well, $10 million, partly.
Once again, Mr. Crail?
My estate may be worth more than that, but surely not less. You?
Surely not less, Mr. Crail. Rather more, I should say.
Yes, $10 million might have some appeal to an ambitious girl, eh, Archie?
Sure, but I'm not a girl, and I'm not ambitious.
Nobody could accuse you of either fault. Mr. Crail, we are getting nowhere. Either you tell your story from the beginning or take it somewhere else. Archie, I'd like some beer.
When I went out for the beer, the kitchen was a mess, and incidentally, I saw what was being prepared for lunch. When I got back to the office, Mr. Crail and his boy were gone. One beer for Mr. Wolf. What happened?
What took you so long, Archie?
I had a sandwich.
And spoiled your lunch.
You know what you're having for lunch?
Of course. I planned it. Baby octopus. Delicious.
I'll take your word for it. What happened to the blind tycoon?
Get your book, will you, Archie? I want to give you a few notes.
Well, just a second. Okay.
Item?
Item.
You needn't repeat everything after me.
Yes, Master.
Item, Horace Crail was born blind. Item, his wife and their 6-year-old daughter, Magda, disappeared in their private plane 13 years ago. Magda returned last Tuesday. Item, no matter what he says to the contrary, Horace Crail is afraid he's going to be killed. I think Mr. Crail is right.
Memo. From Archie Goodwin to Nero Wolf. Time, 4:32 p.m. The notes you dictated on the Crail case are on your blotter. 3 pages of them. You are with your orchids. I am on my way to the Crail domicile to meet the other characters in this turgid drama. As per instructions, I will bring them here if possible. Love, Archie.
Yes, sir?
My name is Goodwin, Archie Goodwin. I believe I'm expected.
This way, please, sir.
Tell me you're Nero Wolfe.
Not by a couple of 100 pounds. I'm Archie Goodwin, his assistant.
Well, I'm Magda Crail. Nobody's assistant. That awful Hugh Gaines creature said Nero Wolfe wants to talk to me.
He does.
Well, where is he?
Waiting for you. No hurry, though. No hurry at all. Just play and don't worry about a thing. Black hair, green eyes, skin like a magnolia petal. Beautiful, beautiful. While she finished what she was playing, I watched her. Beautiful.
Well?
Beautiful.
Mr. Goodwin.
Archie.
Oh, we could get along together, Archie, if that's the way you are.
It's the way I am. I can't seem to do anything about it.
Where's Anthony?
Anthony George.
Well, I thought both my repulsive half-brother and I were supposed to meet Nero Wolfe.
I'm here in case anybody wants to know.
Over there in the shadows, listening with all his ears. That's Anthony George. Shall we go and talk to Nero Wolfe, Anthony?
Goodwin, you look like a normal sort of person.
Well, that's open to question, but go on.
If you had to choose between $10 million and killing a woman by due process of law, which would you choose?
I'll think about it between now and July 1994. Now, shall we go talk to Nero Wolfe?
Miss Crail.
Yes, Mr. Wolfe.
Why did you wait until now, until last Tuesday, to let your father know that you were living?
Does it make any difference?
I think so.
13 years ago, I was 6.
What she means is that she was 6 when she died.
But I didn't die, Anthony Sweet.
Obviously. But Magda Crail did, with my mother.
His mother. Anthony says he doesn't remember me as a child. But I remember him, the brat.
What about me?
When I was about 4 or 5, you were 8 or 9, I suppose. Do you remember dressing up in one of Daddy's tailcoats, a sword, and Mother's hat with a plume?
Suppose I did. You're still not my sister.
Don't worry, Anthony. When poor Father dies, I'll support you.
Archie.
Sir?
I made a mistake.
A mistake? You?
I thought I wanted to talk to these young people. I don't. Take them away. Take the young lady to a nightclub.
On my salary?
As part of our investigation, it will be charged to Mr. Horace Crail.
It was no hardship at all. In fact, it was a pleasure. We dropped Anthony George off at the Crail place, and Magda and I went on and on.
You're a wonderful dancer, Archie.
You can't make enemies that way, honey.
Archie, why did Mr. Wolfe want you to take me out?
To find out whether you really are Crail's daughter.
How did he expect you to find out?
I don't know.
Do you think he knew?
He probably had some idea, but I don't know what it could have been.
Honestly?
Honestly.
Archie, do you think I'm telling the truth?
No. But wait a minute, baby. I don't think you're lying either. I just don't think.
Give me my handbag, Archie. Thanks. I've got something here that might interest both you and Mr. Wolfe. Here. Those are snapshots that were taken of me before I was 6.
Huh. Yeah, cute.
Now look at me.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Can't you see those pictures are of me?
Kids that young all look the same to me, but suppose they are pictures of you. What of it?
Well, just this. I found them in one of Mr. Crail's old photograph albums. My father, I mean.
Oh, here's something.
Well, one lying on my tummy on the white bearskin rug. All babies get their pictures taken that way. Here, give it to me.
Wait a second. What's this mark under your shoulder blade?
It's a little birthmark, like a strawberry.
It's clear. Look, honey.
Why are you so interested in babies, Archie?
Because I always thought I should have been a mother. Now, look, have you still got that mark on your back?
Of course. At least, I suppose so. They don't go away, do they? Where are you going?
I'll be right back.
All right, good detective adventure of the new adventures of Nero Wolfe from April 20th, 1951, The Case of the Lost Heir, starring Sidney Greenstreet with Harry Bartell as Archie Goodwin there. Let's take a break. We'll be back with more after these words. A little earlier today, we gave away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. And as you know, if you've been listening to this radio show, Cat's Pride is our main sponsor here. They're one of the main reasons why we are able to bring you these classic radio shows every single week on Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. And Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cat's Pride, comes in here once a month along with Dave Weitzke, and they choose a winner, and they give away very graciously a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, which is a terrific gift, especially if you have a cat. If you don't have a cat, maybe not so special, but you can use it for, you could use it like Roger was using salt the other day. He had it in the back of his car, helps his car not slip in the snow.
It doesn't really help if it spills all over the trunk,
no.
though, and then it doesn't help you not slip.
But in all sincerity, Cat's Pride kitty litter is the best kitty litter on the market, and Dan is very generous, gives away a year's supply Cat's Pride kitty litter to one of our lucky listeners. Now, how do you qualify? Well, Lisa will tell you all about it.
Well, so we want you to send in a picture because we will have another drawing at the end of the month. So you need to send in a photo to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Make sure to put your name, your cat's name, your city, and your state. And we will have a drawing again. I guess it will be 4 weeks from today on Sunday.
Yeah, and if you want to be in the picture with your cat, that's just fine.
Well, actually, it would be 3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Because we're a week late from the holidays. So the end of January.
Right, the one we just chose
was from the December.
Was for December,
so
yeah.
So it should be in 3 weeks from tonight. We will have another winner. So send it in again. Keep sending it in, and you'll have a chance again to win.
Yeah, take a picture of your cat and email it.
You know,
to
anybody who has a cat has a picture of their cat.
That's true.
You know, it's
I
just
guess
the way
so.
It is.
Yeah.
I just showed you a picture of my dog. I just
she shows
I can't
me
stand
pictures
it.
Of her dog.
I just took Dan took it tonight.
Week.
Because it's
he is cute though.
He's so cute. We just took the cutest picture of me just
now,
sleeping.
Speaking of that, I said to Lisa, I think you love your dog so much because you want a baby. This is what I said because I think Lisa misses having a baby.
Well, yeah, of course I do.
So I said,
not so much that I'm going to do it again.
I said your dog is like a surrogate to your for
is
a baby.
A what?
Surrogate. For a baby, for you.
It's a substitute for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would go so far as a surrogate, but it's a substitute.
Well, yeah. Surrogate means a substitute for.
Yeah, I know. But our argument
do
was...
Do you?
It's all true.
Do you know?
I do. But normally that word is used in terms of like a surrogate mother.
But I
so
know,
I'm just
but
saying I'm not a surrogate mother or don't
no,
purport
I know
to be.
That. But
I get it.
I think you love your dog so much because you want a baby.
Well,
why don't you and Dan have another baby?
Yeah, why don't we? We'll have to take that under consideration.
Let's talk to him about it tomorrow.
Might be a little long in the tooth for a baby.
Long in the tooth. That's a nice way of saying it.
Yeah.
Nah, you could have a baby.
I could, but I shouldn't.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah,
just
I could.
Go right ahead.
Just
go right ahead. You have my permission.
Thank you.
Have a baby.
All right. I'll think about how
All
long
right.
my teeth are.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Esmeralda. Thank you, Roger. And it is 1:36 in the morning, and we are playing your favorite classic radio shows. We have a website, too. Don't forget, WGNRadioTheater.com. Our entire schedule is up there. In fact, I think it's all the way through Easter. We've put up the schedule, so you'll know just what radio shows we're airing each and every Saturday and Sunday night. And it amazes me. We've been on the air 3 years. We still have listeners that say, what? You're on two nights a week? You're on Saturdays and Sundays, and it's a different show? Yeah, it's live. We're here live.
Can I tell you how many listeners will go to Facebook and say what is on the show? Which is crazy because what I do is I post a schedule of all of the shows that we are playing on Saturday and on Sunday. I also post photos from those shows for Saturday and Sunday. And I also post a fun fact about the show and I post a podcast. I will post it tomorrow, which will have both shows on it. From this past Saturday and Sunday. So just check Facebook, everything and more.
Yeah, Lisa gets
there.
Annoyed if her work is not noticed, if it goes unnoticed.
No, but they're literally posting under the schedule, what's the schedule for tonight?
Yeah.
I'm going, just look up.
Yeah.
It's right there.
I know.
It's right there, right
well,
there.
Well, there is a lot of ways to know what we're airing ahead of time.
Right.
You can subscribe to Nostalgia Digest. That's a great way.
You could knock on my door, say, what are you playing tonight?
Right.
That would work.
This is true. You can
bombard Carl and say, what do you got going
right.
on the schedule?
Well, I mean, to me, I'm not a big Facebook or, you know.
But if you can go to Facebook and go under the post to ask what's on it, you could probably see the schedule,
yeah, but,
too.
But I'll just say, real easy way is just go to our website, WGNRadioTheater.com, and click schedule, and it has it all listed. In fact, you can just scroll down, and it's right there.
You can look at Remind Magazine. Oh, no. Nostalgia Digest.
Yeah, Nostalgia Digest. All right, we are listening to The Adventures of Nero Wolfe. Let's go back to the conclusion and hear it. It's called The Case of the Lost Heir.
Nero Wolfe speaking.
Archie Goodwin. I'm with Magda Crail.
No doubt.
What?
No doubt, I said. But never mind. What do you want?
I want to ask a question.
Go on.
You don't think Magda's Horace Crail's daughter, do you?
I don't think anything.
You're stealing your lines from me.
Never. All right, then, no. I don't think the girl is Crail's daughter.
That's just what I hoped you'd say.
Why, Archie?
Because for once you're wrong.
She's pretty, isn't she?
Yes, she is. Also, she's got a birthmark.
You have seen it?
No, but nobody's going to be fool enough to claim a birthmark. It isn't there. It's too easy to prove.
Good night, Archie.
But you deserted me, Archie. You know Hugh Gaines, don't you?
Hello, Gaines.
Hello, Goodwin. Making hay while the moon shines?
You know, if you work that into a routine, it could be pretty dull.
You don't like me, do you?
Do I have to?
No. No, not in the least.
Well, that's good. Mr. Wolfe and I feel it's wrong to like any of our clients, especially a nightclub.
Really? Why?
Because they might sit down at your table while you're making a telephone call.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Never mind. Finish your drink.
Once again, I'm sorry.
Forget it. Mr. Crail seems to think that Magna's trying to rook him.
Apparently.
What do you think?
Boys, I'm here too, you know.
What? What do you think, Mr. Gaines?
Well, to me, it's a matter of no importance one way or the other. As for Mr. Crail, what he wants is absolute proof. And of course, there's no such thing as proof that is absolute. Do you want me to add it up for you?
Yeah, that's exactly what I want you to do for me. Add it up.
13 years ago, Mrs. Crail and her small daughter Magda boarded a chartered plane in St. Louis to fly across the Ozarks to Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
They took off, and that's the last that ever was heard of them, or the pilot, or the plane.
Okay, add some more.
Mr. Crail had the whole area searched for months. The search itself cost almost $50,000.
And the plane was not found.
They finally decided that it must have fallen into the Mississippi, where it would sink to the bottom and stay forever.
Now, wait a minute. Magda.
Yes, Archie?
Don't you remember anything about this trip?
Nothing. Not a single thing. The last I remember is Mother putting me to bed in a strange city, in a hotel. And that's all.
Okay, what's the next thing you remember?
Archie, dear.
Yeah?
Didn't my father go over this whole business with Mr. Wolfe?
I suppose he did.
Then do we have to do it again?
There must be some reason why he wanted me to take you to a nightclub.
Because I might say something I haven't already said 100 times.
Maybe. What's the next thing you remember after your mother put you to bed in a strange city?
Archie, I have a confession to make.
This I believe. Go ahead.
$10 million is a lot of money.
So I've been told.
I don't really remember a single solitary thing before I was 6 years old and going to school in Rogers, Arkansas.
Not Anthony George wearing tails and a sword?
It was one of the pictures in the album.
Not your mother putting you to bed in a hotel in St. Louis?
$10 million, Archie.
So you're not Magda Crail?
Well, of course I'm Magda Crail. Oh, I may have tried to make the story sound a little more convincing than I should have, but I'm Magda Crail just the same. How could I be anybody else?
So far, I can't see why you shouldn't be anybody else.
Miss Crail will now bring up the matter of the diary. Won't you, Miss Crail?
The diary?
Oh, you don't know. Then Mr. Wolfe has told you nothing at all about this case, has he?
He probably told me all I needed to know. What about a diary?
Well, you see, Mr. Goodwin, Miss Crail's memory begins at about the happy age of 7. A black-haired, green-eyed, pigtailed brat named Maggie Lomax. Only child of Walt and Mabel Lomax of Rogers, Arkansas. Am I correct, Miss Lomax? Miss Crail, I mean.
He's a sarcastic character, isn't he, Archie?
That he is. What about this diary?
To cut a long sob story short, Walt and Mabel Lomax died in an automobile accident a few weeks ago, leaving, only Maggie. Take it from there, Maggie.
There was no money. I looked through the house to find anything I could sell, and I came across a hidden box. The diary was in the box, along with some clothes that might fit a 6-year-old girl.
The clothes look like what the girl was last seen wearing.
How do you know?
Well, there's a photograph in one of Mr. Crail's albums taken in St. Louis the day before the flight. But for $10 million, those clothes could be reproduced, stitch for stitch.
Archie, dear.
Take him out in the alley. It would be a pleasure.
Oh, now, wait a second, Archie. With one arm tied behind you, I think you could probably beat me into a pulp. Is it all right if we don't prove it?
We were talking about the diary, Archie.
Okay, what about it?
Archie, I don't even claim the handwriting is mine. What's handwriting when you're 6 years old? Still, the first page is one of those things that has name, name of parents, home address, and like that. Color of hair, eyes, you know.
Sure, I had one myself.
Certainly. Every child had one. One or a dozen. Maybe they still do. You fill in the first page and then you never write another word.
Honey.
They were cheap. I doubt if they cost a quarter, and there was a place that said, my first date, favorite pastime.
Look, baby.
Oh, he calls me baby, Mr. Gaines.
Yes, I noticed that. I think he'd believe your story no matter what you told him.
Get lost, will you, Mr. Gaines?
What's that?
Get lost. Drop dead. Turn blue.
Well, I can take a hint. Good night, Archie, and Miss Lomax.
Prissy, isn't he?
Prissy is the word.
He doesn't seem to believe your story.
He believes what he's told to believe. It's his job.
Sure.
You believe me, don't you, Archie?
Honey, you're beautiful, just the way you are. Now let's talk about the diary.
I hate you.
I hate you, too.
Shall we dance?
The diary.
Oh, dear.
Where is it?
Do you call this romance?
No, I call it working overtime. Where is it?
Here, in my handbag. Here. Push over. We look at it together. I'm not crowding you, am I?
What's a little crowding?
Cozy, isn't it? Now, look at the cover first. My diary, 1934. I suppose somebody gave it to me for my 6th birthday.
Let's just not suppose anything, shall we?
All right, Archie. Page 1. Name, Magda Crail. Date of birth, October 11th, 1928. Could you read it? Or can you read?
Anything you can write, honey. Date of birth and so on. Father, Horace Crail. Mother, Mabel Crail. Hair black, eyes green. My favorite pastime, playing with dogs. Playing has a Y in it.
You know what I think, Archie? You wouldn't call that writing, would you? Not real writing.
It's more like printing.
I think my mother guided my hand when I wrote that.
Yeah, that's the way it looks, all right. Well...
Dance now?
Dance now. While we danced, while I held that disturbing girl in my arms, I tried to believe the case was just as simple as it seemed. Somehow, she'd survived a plane crash, a head injury, and then a normal life with a couple who naturally wouldn't tell her that she wasn't really theirs. I tried to believe it. I was trying hard when...
Archie, don't look. There's Anthony George.
Oh, yeah, alone in the corner.
You've had a lot of experience, Archie. Do you think he's a killer?
A what?
Do you think he'd commit murder?
I don't think anything about him, but why should he?
For $10 million?
I see what you mean. Are you worried?
Not with you around, Archie. Not with you around.
It was like that, maybe even more like that, until the waiter told me I was wanted on the telephone. I asked her to keep the table warm, that I'd be right back.
Hello? 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 This is Archie Goodwin.
Archie?
Oh, hello, Mr. Wolf.
I've been talking to Mr. Crail.
Wonderful.
A little less humor, perhaps?
Okay, what about Mr. Crail?
He showed me some pictures of his daughter.
Baby pictures?
Unfortunately. Some of the pictures were missing from the album.
Those are the ones I've been looking at.
Archie, I'm interested in that birthmark.
So am I.
Do you think you could persuade the young lady to have a picture taken of her back undraped?
Wait a minute. Just one moment, please.
Well?
You mean that?
Clear picture in a bright light.
How would you like her posed, Mr. Wolf?
I am not amused, Archie.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All I want is a clear, sharp, focused picture of that birthmark. And I expect you to get it for me. Good night, Archie.
Hello again.
Dance?
No. Talk.
More talk?
Lots more.
What now?
That birthmark.
So I've got a birthmark. What about it?
I wish I had one that was worth $10 million.
So do I. This one is worth nothing to me. Since my father doesn't believe I'm his daughter, he's blind. That kind of identification doesn't mean anything to him.
You're forgetting the people he trusts. Hugh Gaines, for instance. If the birthmark is there, couldn't he look at it, compare it with those awful baby pictures, and say, yes, here is your daughter?
I've got news for you, Archie. He has looked at it. He says it looks the same as the one in the baby pictures.
Has he told your father that?
Yes. But he also told him he thought I was a fake. That somehow I found out that the 6-year-old daughter of a millionaire had died in a plane crash 13 years ago. And I found out she had a strawberry birthmark on her back. And I had one, too. So I decided to say that I was Magda Crail.
That's absurd.
Of course it is. You can see how it's going to work out, can't you, Archie?
Frankly, no. How?
My father went to Mr. Wolf simply to have him prove that I am his daughter. Whatever Hugh Gaines says. The only thing I'm afraid of, though...
What are you afraid of, baby?
I'm afraid my darling half-brother might kill him before he has a chance to change his will.
Isn't that a somewhat mercenary view to take of the matter?
Maybe it is, Archie. And maybe I'd feel differently about it if my father had found me instead of waiting for me to find him.
He tried, didn't he?
I wonder.
Let's get back to that birthmark. Are you allergic to floodlights? I know a photographer who has a studio.
Confound it, Archie.
How did you know it was going to be me?
Because nobody else would dare to call me this late. What do you want?
I got the pictures. They're drying now.
If you come home, bring them with you. They may be important tomorrow. Have you heard that Horace Crail was murdered?
No. How? Who? Where?
Tomorrow we'll talk about it, Archie. Good night.
At 4 p.m. the next day, there was quite a lot of confusion in Nero Wolfe's office. At his direction, I'd set up a picture screen at one end of the room, and on his desk at the other end, a rather strangely constructed projector. At 4:30, the guests arrived. Magda, Anthony, George, Hugh Gaines, and of course, Inspector Kramer, ready to make an arrest if he could figure out whom to arrest. Hello, Inspector.
Hi, Goodwin.
Magda, Anthony.
Hello,
George, you.
Yeah, what's this all about? What's going on, Archie?
You got me, Inspector. I think Mr. Wolf wants to show slides of his trip to Yellowstone Park. But here he is. Ask him.
Oh, say, Wolf, you want to know what I think?
Not in the least, Inspector. Sit down somewhere, won't you? Archie, will you turn out the lights? Thank you. Now, this is a picture of Magda Crail lying on her stomach at the age of 6 months. I changed the focus so, and we have a close-up of a birthmark. A smooth discoloration that looks as if it might have been painted on.
Now, look, Wolf, you said if I came here, you'd give me the guy who killed Horace Crail, and you show me a picture of a baby's back.
Inspector, if you open your mouth again, I may not keep my promise.
Go ahead.
While we look at this enlargement of a birthmark on baby's back, let us remember that the late Mr. Horace Crail was blind and never saw it.
So what? What's he getting at, Goodwin?
Inspector, if I knew, I'd tell you. Listen.
Mr. Crail had a trusted secretary, Hugh Gaines.
I'm here.
Of course, Mr. Gaines had a brilliant idea. He knew the tragedy of Mrs. Crail and her daughter, and he decided to bring Crail's daughter back to life.
What makes you think so, Mr. Wolf?
You had access to the photograph album, and only you. Oddly enough, Mr. Crail didn't even know his daughter had a birthmark until you told him.
That may be true, but what of it?
It's unimportant. Now I want to show you another picture. Archie, explain this picture, will you?
Reading from left to right, this is a picture of Miss Crail's back. Very pretty, too.
As you can see, there is what appears to be a small birthmark, somewhat under the left shoulder blade. I change focus. And as it becomes larger...
That's not a birthmark. That's tattooing. You can see it.
Tattooing, of course. And Mr. Gaines had a brilliant idea how to make use of a tattooed birthmark and Miss Magna to help him out. Blind as he was, Horace Crail saw through it. That's why Hugh Gaines had to kill him.
No, you don't, Gaines.
Mr. Wolf... Mr. Wolfie, all right?
Of course I'm all right. Well, Inspector Kramer, Mr. Gaines is your man. Another bottle of beer, please, Archie.
It's right there in front of you. You know, I was thinking, a girl can get herself tattooed, can't she? Is that a crime? What does it prove?
Archie, Archie. Have I ever told you I love you?
I'm going to bed.
Good night, Archie.
Ah.
have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story by Mindred Lord was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman production, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Harry Bartell as Archie Goodwin, and Martha Shaw, Vic Rodman, Peter Leeds, Gray Stafford, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you the case in Room 304. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
That is The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe from April 20th, 1951, with The Case of the Lost Heir, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Hope you enjoyed that.